and I think I will just sit here and see. Can I ask while she's doing that, there's one more shroud square. There were six words. Awesome. Thank you. So I gave some people pieces of plastic as you were coming in or as I was seeing you. So if you have those pieces of plastic, you could just take them out of your pocket and sort of set them out. This is the gathering point for us all. But before I start talking to you about this, I wanted to talk to you about Lucretius. Lucretius is a Roman poet and philosopher. A lot of you may know, who lived about 2,000 years ago. And I started to think of him as the first object-oriented ontologist, or the first vital materialist, because he popularized the radical idea. It was radical then, and I think it's still radical now to some, that there is nothing but atoms and the void, and everything is made of the same material. So it doesn't go people versus animals versus objects. It's all a swirl of material in different configurations, the same material in different configurations. And you probably also know that Lucretius was really revered as a poet in the Roman world. Cicero, Virgil, Ovid all reference him. And in fact, that was the main way that we knew Lucretius for a very long time, because his main work on the nature of things largely disappeared for about 500 years. And it was rediscovered by a papal secretary in the Middle Ages. If you've read Stephen Greenblatt's wonderful book, Swerve, you know the history. It was discovered in a monastic library. And it then sort of electrified the thinkers of the Renaissance. It influenced Montaigne. It influenced Galileo. It influenced Da Vinci. And some people contend was really a key influence in the Renaissance. So the way that that book by Lucretius was preserved for 500 years in monastic libraries was on vellum, which is animal skin. And the poet Lisa Robertson, in her book Milling, has this wonderful meditation on reading a 9th century codex of Lucretius on vellum, where she notes that one of the pages has a flaw in it, a flaw in the animal skin, maybe a wound in the skin, and she notices that this 9th century monk has doodled around the wound. And then when I was reading this, it really made me think, the material matters, which is so obvious, such an obvious thing to say, but sometimes it seems like the very obvious is worth saying. It's the body that marks, and the marks of the body. And so I was thinking about that in terms of our eco-poetic conference, and I was trying to think of what would be our 500-year eco-poetics conference codex. What will remain here in 500 years? Of course, the official proceedings of our conference will be preserved in ones and zeros. But perhaps there are other participants here at this conference that are speaking in ways that we may not be hearing or even noticing. So I'm working on a book called The Autobiography of Plastic. And as part of that, I every day pick up the plastic that I encounter when I walk my dog and catalog it and sort of engage with it. And so I thought I would do that here as well. And then I had this worry that I had this idea in my mind that Berkeley is like not like the rest of America. It would be this really pristine place. And there would be no plastic in Berkeley. I got sort of worried. And then very soon after I arrived here, I realized that Berkeley is very much like the rest of America. And that in fact I would need to focus my collecting, or I would spend the entire weekend picking up plastic. And so what I decided to do was to pick up the plastic in and around Wheeler Hall, where we are now. And I limited my collecting to the first hour before the conference started. Here it is, our Eco-Poetics Conference Codex. You can see that there are many common species to be found throughout America. Bits of styrofoam, several of those. Ubiquitous Starbucks cup, this one belonging to Ryan. Also the ubiquitous Starbucks stir. And let's see what else. Oh, bottle caps. Bottle caps. This is another very common species. Very colorful collection of bottle caps, maybe half a dozen. So the collecting was really good. And in fact, I got so into it, I got completely absorbed. And one thing I was finding in the tree pit out front where Robert Haas was telling us that was a live oak, were these pieces of cracked vinyl, which seems like particularly collegiate, right? So I was like on my hands and knees, like straining forward to get the last shard of vinyl. And I looked up and realized that I was directly behind this young woman who was giving a tour of the campus. And she had turned to look at me because her gaggle of high school students and parents were all looking at me doing this. But no one asked me about what I was doing, which I was a little disappointed in. I thought maybe there would be like a Berkeley spirit of critical inquiry. I also thought that it was interesting that I, you know, and actually Kaya and I talked about this. Kaya pointed this out, like the idea of being a hoarder. I was hoarding this, I was picking up garbage. And I will tell you, I did not pick up all of it. I have some standards. I don't pick up condom wrappers or condoms. I don't pick up rubber gloves. And the stuff that was just like sticky with food and really gross, I left. So this is by no means a complete representation of the grounds of Beulah Hall in that hour. But anyway, it was just interesting that, you know, sort of I could get away with this hoarding and be kind of invisible about it, whereas probably other people doing other activities, maybe if I were visibly occupying the space, it wouldn't have been so allowed. So just a couple of other interesting things I found when I was collecting. This was also a common species, the disposable flatware. And there's one of these that says world-centric on it, which I thought was really nice. This one is also common, the disposable sauce container. And this one has like obvious teeth marks in it, maybe a squirrel or some kind of creature. This straw is like that too. So there's all this whole ecosystem out here that's, you know, getting the waste that we leave behind. So marks of these bodies. And then there are other things that I sort of passed around. So there's also distributed throughout the room here are little bits of plastic. Most of it from Wheeler Hall. Alicia collected some at Point Reyes, so there's some beach plastic out there too. So of course, our codex that we've created here at the Eco-Poetics Conference is not going to be discovered by a table secretary. It's going to be discovered and is already being discovered by creatures who are reading our material signature on the planet. This came up in one of the earlier presentations. I was so glad to have a conjunction there with this is an albatross chick that has been fed plastic from the ocean by its parents. And you can see the bottle cap and you can see the lighter there. And then if you go to the next slide, then this is, there's a wildlife photographer who took all of the pieces of plastic out of an albatross chick and photographed them. There's 500 pieces, more than 500 pieces here. And this is from a World War II squadron. It's the oldest known piece of plastic in the ocean. So for me, this really underscores what is my understanding of object-oriented ontology, which is that not only is this plastic here in these birds, but if you go to the next slide, it's in fish. And there are some places in the ocean where plastic is more numerous than plankton, which is, of course, the base of the food chain. So this is building up into the food chain. So this is us, right? This is me. There is no difference between this and me. There's no difference between this. I thought the heart was kind of a nice, like, welcome to Berkeley touch. But this is, there's no difference between you and this. This is you. This is you right here. This is your past. This is your present. This is your future. And to me, that is object-oriented ontology. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
your publication of Romans is the autobiography of Kant. Chris reminds me right away of Gertrude Stein writing autobiography of Alice B. Toklas. But if you were to be doing this and with the ability to interview plastic, the first piece of plastic, what would you ask that piece?
The very first original piece of plastic. But you know, I loved what Adam Dickinson, who is writing wonderful things about plastic, for those of you who saw his presentation today, pointed out in his discussion that that plastic is a name for a polymer, which is a long chain molecule, and it's actually our skin and our hair are polymers. It's all really natural. So plastic is not in itself a technological term. But if I were thinking about speaking to the original piece of plastic, I love that question. I think what I would define as the original piece of plastic is a piece of bakelite. No, I wouldn't. It would be before that, maybe. It would be cellulose, the thing that film used to be made from, which was actually a plant polymer. It was made from plants. And it was great for film, except that it burns up when it gets hot. You know, you remember the film strips. I would ask it about the curse of being a zombie, I think. because that's how I've come to think of plastic, that it's something that won't die. And that, it seems, really fundamental to what's wrong with it. Plastic has many. I don't have a feeling about plastic that it shouldn't exist in our lives. I'm not anti-technological. People have plastic heart valves and plastic joints, and there are really amazing things about plastic. Plastic makes planes lighter, so they burn less fuel. But it's this idea that Brian gets his cup from Starbucks, and it's a zombie material. This is going to last. Actually, no one knows how long this will last because it hasn't been around long enough. But indications are that it will break down into smaller and smaller molecules and last for perhaps 1,000 years. That's insane. So I would ask it, I would want to talk to it as a monster, like a zombie, what that's like. And also remembering that it's